Reluctantly crouched at the starting line. Engines pumping and thumping in time. The green light flashes, the flags go up. Churning and burning, they yearn for the cup. They deftly maneuver and muscle for rank. Fuel burning fast on an empty tank. Reckless and wild, they pour through the turns. Their prowess is potent and secretly stern. As they speed through the finish, the flags go down. The fans get up and they get out of town. The arena is empty, except for one man still driving and striving as fast as he can. The sun has gone down and the moon has come up. And long ago somebody left with the cup. But he's driving and striving and hugging the turns and thinking of someone for whom he still burns. He's going the distance. He's going for speed.
Welcome to Talking Giants presented by DraftKings. I'm your host Bobby Skinner here with my co-host Justin Pennick. And we have our mailbag, a victory mailbag, which is fun. You know, we're going to talk about some things that need to be cleaned up on the team. But it's a lot more fun talking about the things you need to clean up after a win. Justin, how are you doing?
Feeling good. Feeling really good. Think the stats report video is going to be really, really good this week. A lot of our content has been really, really good. Thank you all for kind of watching it, following it, doing what we got to do.
Number 10 podcast in all of football.
Yes. Can we start off with saying a little thank you with that?
Yes.
Can we do that?
Thank you.
Thank you.
For giving to Talking Giants.
Thank you. Yeah, over 1,000 5-star ratings.
Glad you gave.
Number 10 on all sports, or number 10 for football shows, top 50 for all sports. That's kind of cool. Thank you so much. Bobby challenged you to make us a top 10 football show. We did it. Got over the 1K ratings. Thank you so much. Feeling good. Feeling good. Looking at a lot of the stats for this Giants team. Feeling really good about Daniel Jones, especially now. You don't really need to search for reasons as to why Daniel Jones is maybe not having as bad of a season as everybody thinks. Like, no, you literally can look at any of, like, kind of the advanced stuff that I like to look at. And it's like, oh, well, Daniel Jones is up there. There's no kind of searching for reasons for optimism, at least for Daniel Jones. And quarterback is the most important position all the game. And he has me feeling very excited and also excited to head into Dallas this Sunday. Bobby Skinner, how are you?
I'm good, man. It's been a busy week. Fun week though. It's always fun to win. And we got a lot of good mailbag questions. You know, we got a lot of the same. Like, usually, you know, I pair ones that are similar together. I was like, man, we got like five of the same ones. So I only put three together. But we tried to get everyone in there that we could. Speaking of people that we want to get in there, we have some new people who are part of the family. We have Ashley Goracio, who was actually at New England camp with you. How about that?
Yes.
We got Lat Me, even though I think his name is Matt Lee, but Forever 80s Giants Football. I just don't really think that's this guy's name. Christopher Davidson, Daniel Jones' brother, Bates Jones, transferred from Davidson to Duke.
Mm.
Muted Grau, who hates snacks, and now he's a Patreon.
Yes.
So I hate snacks too now. We got Lars R. Patenade. When I first saw that, I thought it was someone trying to get us, you know, with a name. We got John Fuchs, F-O-O-X.
I feel like
we're just really entering like fake name territory. We got Evan Walrus, John O'Connor. That's a real name. We got Jasser, Abdurasakov.
Good job.
Chocolate Jefferson. Take it easy, Mr. Jefferson. And we got Bryant, just Bryant, and then Jacob Gruber. Who's a goofy goober? Who are all these goofy goobers, Justin?
Oh my gosh, all these people that are sponsoring today's show. They went to patreon.com/talkinggiants. And for $2 a month, plus there's some other tiers if you want, hang out with us while we record the shows. Bobby Skinner's got a janky hat on. Hopefully that's not a bad look by the time that we put this out on October 6th, because the Yankees play a baseball game today. So we're getting all excited for that. We're continuing to celebrate a win. patreon.com/talkinggiants. Be a part of the Patreon community. Thank you to our patrons.
All right, let's get into this mailbag. Take it away, Steve.
Mail time.
Mail time.
The mail's here. Come on.
Bye, guys.
Here's the mail. It never fails. It makes me want to wag my tail. When it comes, I want to wail.
Thanks, Steve from Blues Clues. Justin, let's get into the mail.
All right, we got three questions kind of linked together to start. Brian Porras at BPorras1. He
asks, Duke gang?
Will Slayton snaps diminish significantly even if he returns healthy? I'd hate to lose the benefits of that Daniel Jones chemistry with him. Vin Scam at VinScam17. Is Slayton relegated to more of a backup role with Tony and Ross playing well or without cutting the Shepherd's workload. Keep up the great content. Thank you, Vin. And then Travis D'Alessandro at Travis D8. He has, setting aside what should happen when Shep and Slayton are healthy, will Judge bury Tony on the depth chart again? He says go Sox, but I'm not going to read that.
So the question is, what happens to Darius Slayton when him and Shepherd are back healthy? And, you know, I like Slayton, but Kenny Galladay's the big money wide receiver. He's like the, you know, he's the alpha dog on this team. Sterling Shepherd has been playing, you know, the best football of his career. Kadarius Toney is forcing himself onto the field, and he was a first-round pick. He's not just some random dude on this team. He's a first-round pick who needs to be involved. And he seems like to have a personality that you probably want to keep involved. You know, you don't want to let him play one game and then relegate him to 20 snaps or whatever. Like, you kind of have to keep Kadarius Toney involved and a part of this Giants offense going forward. And even you got guys like John Ross, who's like, that speed is not, you know, nobody on this team can...
The difference maker.
Can compete to that. And we saw it with John Ross. And John Ross even had like a really beautiful curl route, you know, and it was set up by his speed. So, I don't know what happens with Darius Slayton. Justin, like, what happens with Darius Slayton? Like, how do they get him reps, but also not taking stuff away from Kadarius Toney and Sterling Shepherd? And this is why we kind of viewed Shepherd as, like, a goner after this year. But it's like, well, you can't really move off Shep playing this well. You know, you got to put the best guys on the field. And I think Toney is more of a difference maker than Slayton. But at the same time, Slayton has been that deep ball guy for Daniel Jones since their rookie season. And that connection, like Brian Porras says, is very real.
Yeah, I think the Giants are in a very good spot right now at wide receiver, and one that they have not been in a very, very long time. Wouldn't you say, Bobby? Like, this is a very good problem to have.
Yeah, it is, but at the same time, it's like, it is a problem, because, like, you can't, I know, like, I just feel like Slayton's not a guy that just gets 40% of the reps, you know? And even that might be high with the way they want to play Toney and use two tight end sets, which we're going to talk about later. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's just if you just went three wide receivers all game. So maybe they do some four wide receiver stuff. I don't know, but it is going to be very interesting to see the way they handle all this personnel. Yeah.
I don't think they're going to do four wide receiver stuff. I think they just really like... We're going to talk about 12 personnel and some of the things that the Giants did this past weekend to really maximize their personnel. But Darius Slayton had 70% of the snaps against Denver, 57% of the snaps against Washington, and then 13% of the snaps against Atlanta, but obviously he got hurt in that game. So, Bobby, if he's getting 40 to 50% of the snaps, I'm fine. And what it comes down to is that Kenny Galladay, like, Darius Slayton can be a difference maker, but outside of him running a vertical route down the field, what area do you feel confident in that Darius Slayton could be a difference maker?
He has been good at the, you know, at the route tree, especially on digs, but at the same time, it's like we got guys who are better at that.
Correct. Now, that's why I'm saying Ross is more of a difference maker. Kadarius Toney and Kenny Galladay both together, by the way, now that we're talking wide receivers.
We do need to pump the brakes on John Ross a little bit, though.
No. But Bobby, we talked about during our PPP, when he's on the field, you have to account for him. When Darius Slayton's on the field, I don't think a defense is saying, oh, we have to account for him. He is something that you have to account for. He can take the top off. You saw it against Washington. Should have had two touchdown catches.
He's really good versus press.
You know, he's good against press. But I think John, in terms of a threat, where an opposing defense is looking at it, I think they view John Ross as more of a threat. Is that fair?
Yes, I agree. Okay. Yes, I agree. But let's remember that John Ross drops the ball a ton and you know, gets hurt. You know what I'm saying?
Well,
like, you know, this could figure itself out, you know, going forward. But
right, and that's why it's a good problem to have. But the whole point of, you know, even prioritizing Toney a little bit too, is with Galladay and Toney this past weekend, they both averaged 8 yards after the catch per reception, over 8 yards after the catch per reception. That is the first time in the Jason Garrett era where any wide receiver has averaged more than like 6.5 yards after the catch per reception. I think Sterling Shepard against the Browns last year was the most yards after the catch per reception any receiver had, and that was somewhere in like the 6.3, 6.5 yards after the catch per reception range. So this was the first time.
That is such a huge indictment on Jason Garrett.
It is a huge indictment on Jason Garrett.
Not even one game.
And guess what? There has never been a game where two wide receivers together have averaged together more than like 4 yards after the catch per reception. Like a pairing.
Oh my God.
So I did all the stats. I looked back to 2020. I looked at Golden Tate, Darius Slayton, Sterling Shepard going back to last year. I didn't look at tight ends, but I was just looking at wide receivers. So this past game, it was Galladay and Tony both averaged together over 8 yards after the catch per reception. I want to keep that going. Give those guys opportunities, because especially if they're going to make things happen with the ball in their hands after the catch, that's really important. And Darius Slayton, his yards after the catch per reception is somewhere like in the ones and twos. That's not great. One game sample size, but... it's
yeah, and I guess where it lands on this is, and to answer our questions for ourselves, because it is a hard question, is I want Kadarius Toney playing more than Darius Slayton. He is more of a difference maker. There's more invested in him. I want him involved. He can change a game in different ways than Slayton can. And you can also give Kenny Galladay, like other guys can do the things like you said Darius Slayton could do.
Yeah, and but here's the main question. So when Toney was lining up, let's say, in 11 personnel, was he solely the slot wide receiver? Were they also putting him outside?
No, they did some really good stuff. They had Galladay in the slot. Like, they were moving guys. Like, it was a good game plan offensively. They did, like, they had Galladay in the slot and Toney outside. So, you know, Toney's not like a, you know, we viewed him as a slot because that's what he played at Florida. But he's not like a pure just play slot receiver. The only thing that would keep me from being like, hey, just play him on the outside all the time is Toney just doesn't make contested catches. He never did it at Florida. He's never going to be a contested catch guy, and it's hard to be consistently on good on the outside without that.
Yeah. So that helps Shep's case for staying in the slot, and Shep's snap count, in my opinion, shouldn't really go down since before he got hurt, he was one of the league's best wide receivers. Like, I'm not even just saying that as a Homer Giants fan. Like, he was one of the league's best wide receivers production-wise before he did get hurt. Anything else with wide receivers, Bobby?
I mean, what happens to Colin Johnson?
Oh, yeah, CJ Colin Board? Johnson. Big loss.
Dante Pettis is on our practice squad. That's like, Dante Pettis is someone we were kind of like a little bit excited for at the end of the year, and he can't even get off really the practice
good,
squad.
This is a really good problem. I mean, you can argue that this is some of the best depth. I know, I think Dan Schneier made this, but you can make an argument that this is some of the best depth at wide receivers since 2011. You kind of can.
Oh, yeah, easily.
So, all right, let's flip to the defense side of the ball now. We got three questions together. First one coming from Colton Link at Colton Link 610. And Colton's been doing some really good work for me on game day, gathering some data, first down stuff, explosive play data the day of. So shout out to you, Colton. Give him a follow at Colton Link 610. Will the Giants defense be able to bounce back against one of the better offenses in the league against Dallas? Next question, Wes Locke at Westy Westicles. Would you be opposed to a game plan and letting Zeke eat instead of allowing big pass plays, similar to the Giants versus Bills and Super Bowl 25 strategy? Interesting. And then Jake Java at Jake Trek 22. Thoughts on how we can stop the run without Blake Martinez? Do they look to bring in a run-stopping middle linebacker?
So, you know how you talk about and, you know, Brandon Staley, like kind of some of the new wave in the NFL right now defensively is to let teams run against you. You know, like not just let them, but like not putting an emphasis on the run and kind of like, hey, run the ball, keep running the ball, stay consistent with that. The Giants did that more this week than they ever have before. I mean, something I noticed from Patrick Graham at Miami, and he brought it to the Giants last year, is he would always have one guy extra in the box. We always would have every gap accounted for. This past game, we didn't have, I don't think, there maybe a handful of plays where they had every gap accounted for in the run game.
I was shocked when you told me.
They played with light boxes all game long.
I was shocked when you told me that the Saints had 170 rushing yards. I was shocked. I couldn't believe it when you on the recap episode.
Well, because they didn't have any big runs, but they had, you know, like those consistent 4 or 5 yard runs.
Yeah.
And that was like, the Giants let him, you know, and that's without, you know, if you have Blake Martinez and Dalvin Tomlinson on your team, you can probably get away with that and be good against the run. But when you don't have those two guys, it's like, man, I understand like that mindset, and it was a decent outing for the defense. But watching a team just run against you, man, like that is, it's hard for me to buy into that. It really is. Like it really is. And I think you can get around, like I don't think you're sacrificing in the pass really anymore by putting an extra guy in the box. If anything, playing that too high leads to big plays because you have your safeties playing up for, you know, in the run game more. Here, like, I want Jabril Peppers playing in the box again. He hasn't played in the box this year. Jabril Peppers should be playing more than Xavier McKinney. We have an Xavier McKinney question later we'll get to. But when Peppers is healthy, he should be playing in the box, and especially now that Blake is out. I want us to get back to plus one boxes, and it doesn't mean that we need to be all out stop the run. But we should put some effort into play some decent gap responsibilities in the run game and let our linebackers, you know, drop back in coverage more. Maybe do more one linebacker sets, with Tay Crowder and just Tay Crowder and then, you know, Jabril Peppers next to him.
Yep.
As like a, you know, that money backer. But right now what they're doing is they're playing the three defensive tackles at one time and they're kind of relying on those guys to stop it. And A.J. Johnson makes a good player here too, but he's not consistently off the line. And Danny Shelton's horrible. Shelton has been the biggest disappointment for me. I thought he was a really good signing. He has been horrible. He hasn't even done a good job of being big. So I understand that it's on purpose, but man, it's hard to just like watch us not play. It's hard to watch them not play responsible gap football, play in, play out, when that was something that I just became accustomed to last season.
Yeah. I certainly hope that Peppers can step up in the box a little bit more. That's where he's best. That's where he's best. And it's kind of disheartening to hear that they haven't been letting him, putting him in that situation to be as successful as he possibly can be, especially if you're taking away his snaps. Bobby, there's been a lot of two linebacker sets this year, even with Blake Martinez on the field. I mean, there would be times last year where Blake Martinez would be the only linebacker on the field, and you would have sometimes eight defensive backs and three safeties on the field at once, four safeties on the field at once. And those are the types of looks where I felt like, well, that's where we're strongest, because we're strongest back there. We like our secondary, and those guys kind of running around doing whatever. You don't know which position a guy is playing. That was the strong suit of last year, and I just don't feel like we've had that same kind of unpredictability like we had last year, because especially when you have two interior linebackers where, Crowder and Ragland, they're nice players, but I would rather have our safeties on the field rather than those two guys where, they're not the best against the run and they're not the best in pass coverage, where they're just kind of solid, where we want those safeties to be on the field. Am I right in that?
Yeah, and they're just playing they're playing 3D linemen, one outside linebacker, two inside linebackers a ton. And then they're kind of messing around with Nickel, using Julian Love and Rodarius Williams. Darnay's kind of been taken out of the defense.
Yeah.
Which I like Darnay, but if we want to put an emphasis on playing man coverage, Darnay just doesn't fit that. And it's the reason why they drafted Aaron Robinson. But yeah, the defense hasn't been a bad defense, but it hasn't been the good defense that we expected it to be, which is disheartening. But man, I want to see Patrick Graham get back to plus one boxes. And that doesn't mean you're not playing the pass. Like, you can play the pass. I think, honestly, I'll say it for the McKinney talking point, but I was like, I feel like you can play the pass just as well, if not better, when you have everything towards the line. Like,
Giants have also flat out played better quarterbacks and better offenses to start this year than they did last year. Like, the Broncos are not as bad as everybody thinks. Broncos have been one of the best offenses in the league, and they're doing well. So now the expectations of that matchup and our evaluation of that matchup has kind of changed, right? Washington, we've always thought that they had a solid team. They're hanging in there with Taylor Heineke. He's not a scrub, right? Matt Ryan is still Matt Ryan, even though I thought he had a bad game, blah, blah, blah. And then obviously the Saints are a good football team. Saints are a good football team. So if you look at the quarterbacks, which I'm going to do this on the stat report, if you just look at the quarterbacks that we played like before the bye week last year and then compare them to the quarterbacks that we have this year on our schedule, it is like night and day. Of Carson Wentz twice, Kyle Allen, Alex Smith, Nick Mullins, Trubisky, Ben Roethlisberger, like those guys are, like, again, night and day of some of the offenses and some of the quarterback performances that we've seen so far this year. So,
yeah, but I do push back on that a little bit. Is like, one, a lot of teams do, and I get the Giants maybe played more, but it's like they had really good performance versus Russell Wilson, Tom Brady. And I know Jared Goff isn't viewed as a good quarterback, but that offensive system was really good with the Rams, and they really held that in check the entire game. So, like, the defense has been, like, it's not simply just they're playing better teams, even though that is having an impact.
Well, they're getting better. I think my overall point is that also they're getting better those teams are getting better quarterback performances out of their guys. Now, also, I know a defense forces a quarterback to not have a good performance, right, with their scheme and their players and, making plays on the football, yada, yada, yada. But, sometimes when a quarterback is on a tear, he's on a tear. So it all plays into that. So hopefully the defense can get it.
I mean, the defense is ranked 15th this year. they're giving up yards. I think it's not on purpose, but you know what I mean. We have a question about the end of half stuff, which is pretty interesting. So,
and we'll preview the Dallas game on Friday. So I kind of want to save that because that'll be a good kind of talking point of do you let Dak take 40 attempts or do you let Tony Pollard and Zeke Elliott kind of run all over? So we'll kind of preview that. We'll have extra time since we don't have an interview Friday. All right, next three pairs. Danny Behan, is Daniel Jones still in a clean pocket from Sunday, even after a few days? Some people are asking that. Shout out O-line. Shout out Hog Mollies. I actually felt good putting on this shirt today. Tony B at Tony B underscore from underscore Long Island. Andrew Thomas is a stud and has progressed mightily. Why in the world can't Rob Sale do the same with Matt Parrott? Kind of blows my mind. Thank you, fellas. AJ Austin at Starvin Art. Over under, 4. How many weeks before Solders replaced that right tackle? And will it be by Wilson or Matt Parrott?
So this is just basically, let's talk about the O-line for a second.
Yeah.
I mean, credit to Rob Sale. This O-line is coached up well, you know. And Andrew Thomas, the difference between Andrew Thomas and Matt Parrott is Andrew Thomas is a much better player than Matt Parrott, even with the best of coaching. You know, there's a reason Andrew Thomas went 4th overall and Matt Parrott went at the end, the very end of the 3rd round. You know, they are not the same player. But Andrew Thomas has been a baller this year, and I give Rob Sale credit for that, but I also give Andrew Thomas the majority of the credit. Like, at the end of the day, it's like the player has to be the guy. I give Rob Sale and Garrett, like, they've been chipping a lot. Like, Nate Solder has not been put on an island a ton. They've been chipping with Kyle Rudolph a ton, and the running backs a ton.
During the John Ross touchdown, Kyle Rudolph actually stayed in as a pass blocker. It was a play action.
They do that a lot.
Kyle Rudolph was on the right side of the line of scrimmage, and Kyle Rudolph stayed in as a pass blocker on that touchdown.
They do that a lot, and we'll talk about that with Tim Coffey's question. So Andrew Thomas has been that guy. Nate Solder played all right. You know, here's our defensive ends, the dumbest people in the NFL. Why have they seen what Von Miller did? And I get not every player is Von Miller. Why do they just try and go around the edge on Nate Solder? Like, why does not every defensive end in the NFL try to bull rush and rip inside Nate Solder? It does. I'm blown away. It's like, do you guys not watch film? Like, are you guys just like stuck in like I'm trying to get around the corner every single type of play? It just seems stupid, honestly. Will Hernandez has played all right. You know, Will Hernandez has played like Will Hernandez. You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
He hasn't had the really bad reps the last 3 games. Where week 1 he played bad. He hasn't had these horrible reps that he's had in previous years, but Will Hernandez has not been the same run blocker. Part of that is Nate Solder, though. Nate Solder, I think, might be a worse run blocker than he is a pass blocker. Like Nate Solder is kind of ruining the run game a little bit because he gets squeezed down on every single play.
And that was like Nate Solder's only strength when, 2018 he was
Nate Solder's skinny and weak. Like, yeah. That's really what, like, you could tell in his frame, you could just tell by the way his stance and stuff. Like, he is just, he doesn't have that power anymore. And he's, he wasn't good a couple years ago, but he's older and he's older and lost weight and hasn't played. And Skura looked good, man. Like, Skura looks like, he looks like a smart player who understands hand placement, hat placement, good feet. He Matt Skura looks like a solid player. Now, he doesn't have the athletic makeup and strength to be like, this guy needs to be starting for us next year. But if he plays like this for next couple games, I want them to try and lock him up on like a Spencer Pulley type deal for Matt Skura.
Yeah.
Because he's played better. And Price played good this last game too. But Skura was clearly better than Ben Bredesen.
All right. So do you mess with the whole flow of things, ebb and flow of things, at least pass protection? Because, I mean, run blocking, it's not controversial to say that Matt Parrott is a better run blocker than Nate Solder. A lot of people are a better run blocker than Nate Solder. So do you mess with the ebb and flow and things and put Matt Parrott in
to start because at right tackle? you're giving Solder a bunch of chip help. Do that with Parrott. Yeah, I am still firmly in Matt Parrott should be starting right now.
Yeah.
It's a higher ceiling for a team. We're 1-3 right now. I know we're off of a win, but we're a 1-3 team right now. And Matt Parrott has a higher ceiling. And, the Giants want to run the ball. Like, they start every game trying to run the ball, and then they've gotten away from it, rightfully so, because they haven't done a good job of it. But maybe Matt Parrott comes in and you're able to run the ball a little more the way you want to.
Yeah.
You know, and that makes Will Hernandez a better blocker, and that helps the tight ends on the backside be better blockers. Like, Nate Solder's, he's not good. Even though his this last game wasn't bad, it was like, okay, but you can still see like he's not a good player.
I have a question for you, and I wanted to put this from like the Bleeding Blue account or something, but I'm glad we got some offensive line questions. I'm waiting for the disaster game. I'm waiting for it from the O-line, and you know, I hope that when the disaster game that the O-line has, I hope it's not a disaster game from Andrew Thomas. But here's my question to you. Is what we're seeing from the O-line, from a pass-blocking standpoint, is it sustainable? Do you feel like what the Giants' O-line has been doing kind of the last couple weeks, giving Daniel Jones time to throw, over 3 seconds time to throw, is that sustainable long-term for this year, in your opinion?
This past week, absolutely not. Now, Andrew Thomas is... But a lot of the O-line talking points have come from Daniel Jones manipulating the pocket better. And let's think about it throughout Daniel Jones' career. Was Mike Remmers good? No, but he wasn't an issue. Was Cam Fleming good? No, he wasn't an issue after, you know, week one, week two. Daniel Jones, when everything's in front, and this has been something we've said a ton this year, has been, like, he's been good when the pressure's in his front side. Like, he's used to that. It's just when this, like, if Nate Solder was on his blind side, we'd be talking about how bad the O-line is right now.
Oh, yeah.
And Daniel Jones fumbles. Would still be huge issues.
Yeah, that's why left tackle's the second most important position in the game of football. Like that's why that's said.
Especially with a QB like Daniel Jones. So so what they did last week, sustainable? Absolutely not. But like Andrew Thomas playing well and Daniel Jones being able to manipulate and not be not have games wrecked by the O-line, yeah, that's sustainable for the whole year.
Okay, cool. All right. Next one. Xavier McKinney. Sad Giants fan. At Bilotto, with a lot of O's, has Xavier McKinney been the biggest disappointment on defense? How can the Giants get him to look competent?
McKinney has sucked. Like, I don't know, and no one's talking about it. Like, he blew the
You can't see it. I mean, that's the thing.
That's the issue, is he plays deep safety and you can't see it on TV.
You know, we were on Mike's channel, and, you know, he was like, oh, I think Xavier McKinney's going to be, like, a really good player for the Giants this year. And I'm like, you know what, Mike? Like, you could be right, you could be wrong, but it's the fact that if he's playing deep safety, you're just not going to see it. You're not going to see the impact. It's almost like Julian Love. He was fourth on the team in tackles last year. I can't really tell you all the things that Julian Love did well or that he didn't do well, because when you're playing that deep half safety, it's like, well, the casual fan, and even me, I'm a little bit more than a casual fan, I flat out just don't know.
Yeah, you can't know until Tuesday when the All-22 comes. Like, it's the one position where it's like you really have no clue. And he's blown coverages. He's missed big tackles. Like, Peppers has gotten so much heat this year for playing 10 yards off and getting a former wide receiver who played tight end beat him in man coverage. And people are like, this dude Peppers. It's like, well, McKinney's blowing coverages left and right. Like, McKinney should not be playing over Jabril Peppers. And Peppers has played a little bit of deep safety. Like he, you want to know why you don't talk about Jabril Peppers playing deep safety a lot? Because when he does it, he does a decent enough job.
Yeah.
You know, and he was, you know, the number one strong safety in pass deflections last year, top five in tackles for a loss. They're just not using him the same way they used him last year. You know, and get your conspiracy theory hats on about his contract and stuff and how much that involves in it. But, like, Xavier McKinney has been a huge disappointment. Like, he's blown big-time coverages, and he's missed huge tackles that have led to points for the other team.
Yeah. My draft evaluation of him was that he would be better in the box of, like, coming up and moving forward and then moving side to side and not moving backwards. Well, if he doesn't have the physicality to make tackles because he's missing tackles... Which, by the way, he looks smaller. This happens with every NFL player. But he looks smaller in the NFL than he did in college. I've noticed that. That's just the same physicality isn't there. So he doesn't have the physicality to play in the box. And he's blowing certain coverages when he's playing deep. And that's kind of a tough combo for his safety. It's also very tough.
I would think about playing him at nickel corner.
Yeah. Yeah. I'd agree with that.
Like, what's wrong with that? And you put Jabril Peppers as a strong safety who's playing down towards the line of scrimmage more.
That's kind
of
like the best of both worlds.
That's what I want. That's what I want Patrick Graham to get to, is like, you play McKinney, Rodarius, and you know, you can use Love in those 3-4 safety looks and use Peppers the same way he did last year as the team's strong safety who plays down towards the line of scrimmage majority of the time, and then Logan Ryan is the free. Because McKinney, now again, McKinney is basically his rookie season, you know, so you don't want to be too overcritical, and he can grow and get better. But at this point, he has been bad.
Yeah, I was going to bring up the whole talking point that a lot of people have with Antoine Bethea, even though he was really, really bad. Like, he was one of the worst safeties in the league that, you know, in 2019. But a talking point that came from that is that it's just so hard to play deep center field safety when you haven't played it a ton. Now, I know in Alabama,
they're not asking him to play center field. They're playing too high.
Yeah. Well, I know at Alabama, he played, you know, a decent amount of free safety, but I still feel like his overall strengths and what he did most was moving forward, and it wasn't really moving backwards. I know, you know, PFF, the snap difference, it'll say that it's relatively even, but I just think his experience still mostly moving backwards in that role, not the most familiar thing for him. So yeah, it's a hard position. It takes time. You know, hopefully he gets better.
Yeah, you mentioned it when, you know, the draft, like, that was our talking point after the draft. Is like, he's very similar to Peppers in his skill set. And I still believe that to be true. DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL, has a Week 5 offer every football fan should jump on. Jump on it like Kyle Rudolph jumping on a fumble and people justifying his contract because he fell down on a football. New customers can bet just $1 on any NFL game and win $100 in free bets if either team scores a point. The last 0-0 tie in the NFL was 1943. So I'd say this is a no-brainer. So you hear that, people with no brain? Do this. If sportsbooks isn't available in your states yet, DraftKings won't leave you empty-handed. Everyone can play for huge cash prizes all season long with DraftKings Daily Fantasy Sports Contest. DraftKings is giving all new customers a free shot at millions of dollars in total prizes with their first deposit. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use promo code JOHNBOY. Throw down $1 on any NFL game and win $100 in free bets if either team scores a point. That's promo code JOHNBOY this week at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. Must be 21 or older, New Jersey, Indiana, or Pennsylvania only. New customers only. Minimum $5 deposit, $1 wager required. One per customer. Restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Where's the Indiana thing?
Ooh.
Does Indiana not have it anymore?
Did we lose Indiana?
Maybe if you're in Indiana, try 1-800-9
with it. There you go.
I'm slurring my words, man. I'm tired.
It's okay. Yeah, you've had a long week. You've had a long week.
I'm tired. I drank like 3 bottles of water. Like, my mouth feels kind of dry.
Stupid old 22 coming out. What time did it come out last night?
Like 12 o'clock, and then I have to record it for an hour, and so it's like I didn't even start washing it until 1:30.
Beautiful. Mr. Brownstone, can our offense manage to put up 30-plus points this weekend? Will we finally go for it on fourth down? He also says, burn down MetLife, leave a 5-star review, or else your house will be burned down. Talking Giants versus the world. I had a house fire once. So, can our offense manage to put up...
When are you going to stop making us feel bad for that?
You always bring up your dog dying. I don't want to hear it. Can our offense manage to put up 30-plus points this weekend? Will we finally go for it on fourth down?
They're going to have to, and we'll talk about it more in the preview. Yeah. Like, you have to have the mindset going to this game that this is going to be a shootout. You can't go into this game plan like and be like, oh, well, this, we're going to play our brand of football. Sorry. Adapt or die. You talk about it, be about it. Because this is how you're going to win this game, is a shootout. And maybe you get some turnovers and stuff, but you're not going to get turnovers from playing your brand of football on offense. You have to go into this game expecting a shootout. I have to go get water.
Go get water. I'll talk about how Dallas's defense has been relatively good too, so I don't think the Giants can necessarily head into this game by just resting on their laurels of, hey, you know, we scored 29 points against Washington, we had a good game against the Saints, so we're going to take advantage of this lackluster Dallas defense. No, this Dallas team has looked like a legit team in the NFC. And you can't just take that for granted. Both sides have looked really good for Dallas.
I disagree with everything you just said.
Great. Cool.
All right, next question.
We'll talk about burning down MetLife at the end. Oh, no, going for it on fourth down. I have a take on this, and it's not so anti-Judge. Just thinking of, like, just a human being who takes criticism and wants to correct things. Like, Joe Judge wants to win football games. I do believe that. I think at this point, he has to improve that decision-making. Like, he's got to, like, look... Even if he wasn't all about self-evaluation and...
It's about his process, though.
Blah, blah, blah.
He's basically told the media he's not going to change.
But he kind of has to, right?
It almost seems like, I said it on the Monday podcast, it seems like he's trying to stick it to everyone else.
Like he's defiant, but you can't be that defiant when it comes to like the future of your job.
They haven't went for it on fourth down one time this year where it wasn't like an obvious, like, we have to go for it on fourth down.
Yeah.
And the one they converted was a 4th-and-5 draw play. Versus
Denver. But last year it was the big special teams fake field goal that should have been a touchdown, but stupid freaking Cam Fleming, was it offside? Did he jump off? Did he have a false start or something? Or was he not on the line? I don't know.
Legal procedure or something.
Legal procedure. So, hey, we'll see it against Dallas. I mean, that's when Jason Garrett rolls out everything.
Under Jason Garrett, Daniel Jones is 8 of 9 on 4th-and-5 or less. And the one that didn't get was a QB sneak, so which is really not really put in his hands. It's just move forward and see if it works.
My optimistic look the Wednesday after, you know, Wednesday coming off a win is Joe Judge has to look in the mirror eventually. Has to. So there you go. That's the fourth down. Tim Coffey, you mentioned.
Can I say something?
Uh huh.
Not every fourth down should be went for on. You know what I'm saying? Like,
no, that's
here's
common
sense. I hate Ben Baldwin in general, but what I hate is his fourth down bot. You saw on Thursday Night Football when the Jags went for it, they said it had a better chance of winning by going for it on fourth and not getting it than just kicking the field goal.
And I'm going to challenge you on this.
And I know what you're
going to
say, and I'm going to have a great answer for it.
You're in the red zone. And a team is more likely to score when they have 75 yards to go versus 99 yards to go.
What about when there's 55 seconds left in the half?
It's a model, and you can choose to ignore it, and you can choose to not ignore it.
It's 50. There's 55 seconds left in the half. They weren't going to go 75 yards and score a touchdown.
About win probability. They get to a field goal. It's about win probability. It's not telling you to do one thing or another. It's how much does a certain decision influence win probability? And flat out, you have a better win prop. No, it's one of the best in the National Football
League. Ben Baldwin said it himself that it was like, that doesn't make sense.
All right, well then, it's still one of the best in the National Football League. That model is still one of the best. And it's about win probability. You are more likely to win and put points on the board when you have 75 yards to go versus 99 yards to go. It's win probability. It's not just like black or white, this is better or that's better. It's just, Joe Judge said it, it's a tool, and it's just part of a process of thinking of fourth down decision making. You can't just nitpick the one little thing. You can't. That's not what analytics is. It's not black or white.
That's like a big thing. It's like saying that being up 14 is better than being up 17 because of a 24-yard difference with 56 seconds left in the half.
Well, what was the win probability difference? 2%? And you had a problem with 2% for win probability?
But it just doesn't make any sense.
If it was 10%, I have a problem with that. But it's 2%. So again, you're looking at things in a vacuum, and you can't.
All I'm saying is there's more to it than just, like,
I'm saying there's more to it.
I will never use fourth down decision. Like, and which was so funny about Carl Banks being like, these analytics don't have a heartbeat. It's like, dude, I shit on analytics all the time. And that was so frustrating. It's like, dude, I'm not even talking about analytics. Like, some of these fourth down decisions by Judge this year in particular, I thought last year got overblown a little bit, where like, it's like, no, dude, he should be going for these. Not because of analytics, but because of just using and thinking about it. But anyways,
Tim Coffey.
Ben Baldwin's a weirdo.
Tim Coffey does a lot of good stuff, though. Like, I rely on it. You mentioned the two tight end max protect success we had. I'm a weird guy, and I'm an analytics guy. You mentioned the two tight end max protect success we had. How do you see us using that to our advantage moving forward? Opponents will have tape to study, but if Engram and quads are used like they can be, is 12 personnel the new 13? P.S. Bobby is a goalman. I have an answer to this. This is the first time I'm going to answer first. So, look at the two touchdowns that the Giants scored on Sunday. Or the two big touchdowns, excuse me. You know, the 54-yarder to Saquon, 52-yarder to John Ross. Both of those formations were 12 personnel. Now, the Saquon Barkley one was an empty set, empty backfield. Saquon Barkley was lined up as a wide receiver, and then he had Rudolph and Engram kind of like on the slots, you know, closest to the tackles, right? And then you had your two wide receivers out there. So that was 12 personnel, shotgun, spread. I love that. Spread the field. And then for the John Ross touchdown, you have a more conventional running formation, 12 personnel, Rudolph, Engram with their hands on the ground, And then also you had Ross and Golladay kind of tighter to the line of scrimmage. Saquon Barkley in the backfield, play action, a running formation, bring the play action in there, boom, John Ross over the top for the touchdown. So the way that they used 12 personnel with Rudolph and Engram, they've always flanked out Engram out as a, even an 11 personnel. That's why the Giants run it so much, because they can put Engram on the line with his hand to the ground, or they can flank him out wide. It's kind of like lining up as a wide receiver. So that's why they run it so much. But this past week, because they kind of lost Slayton and Shep, they ran 12 personnel 30% of the time. In weeks 1 through 3, they only ran it 22% of the time. So that was about like a 10% uptick in 12 personnel usage. But they used it differently rather than just putting the two tight ends in close to the line of scrimmage.
Yep, I agree with that. And Tim Coffey's saying, like, will it get game plan against? They've been doing this for a while. They've just been amping it up more so lately, especially when they had the personnel of Tony and Golladay together without Shep and Slayton. So they've always done it. They're just amping it up, you know, these max protect calls. Like, that's something they did a ton last year. And they got some decent chunks out of it. It's just kind of, it's an all or nothing play with the Andrew Thomas block, you know, being able to block well has helped it. Where last year, you know, doing that play led to a fumble return for a touchdown versus Dallas. You know, and there was other times where, you know, Caden Smith or Wayne Gallman screwed up the protection versus the Cardinals and he got a fumble versus Marcus Golden. In that play. So they've done a better job blocking it up, which Jones has been able to step up and find. Like, it's like you got to find the holes in the zone, but those holes will come there. Yep. You know, and if it's man coverage, Tony, Shep, Golladay, those guys are going to beat that. You're going to win it, or Rudolph's going to take. Like, it's working. You know what I'm saying? And so I want the Giants to stick to it. And that's something we even talked about on Sunday. So yeah, I don't think there'll be some huge game plan for it, because it's kind of something that's hard to game plan for, really. You know, because there's you can run all different types of route concepts out of it, and it's only two men, so it's not like your zone isn't ready for a two man route. It's just unless you blitz the crap out of it, but then you got guys beating man coverage, so it's old school, but it's been working. You know, yep. So that's like the one old school thing that Jason Garrett and them have done that is working. But while we're talking about two tight end sets, I really hate that they're giving Kyle Rudolph playing time over Caden Smith because of his contract. Caden Smith only had 9 snaps this past week. Kyle Rudolph looks extremely slow. Caden Smith is much better in the run game. He, you know, using that fullback H-back role. That is very frustrating about this coaching
staff.
Kyle
Rudolph cost us 4 points.
I went and looked at that, and I'm not going to hold that play against him. Because he was being led out of bounds, you know. Like, maybe... Yeah. Maybe Caden can, like, dive in, but it wasn't like a gather yourself and try and chuck yourself in. It looks different from the back angle.
Yeah, his 20-yard catch, I thought on Sunday that, like, this he should have easily jumped over that defender because the defender was going after his ankles, or just dive over him, put his shoulder down, do something, not just run out of bounds inside the 5-yard line, because then the Giants, that was a series of events where the Evan Engram sweep, and it only led to a field goal after a couple explosive plays. So I was really mad at Rudolph in the moment. I was like, what are you doing, bro?
Yeah, he should have made a better effort, but I don't think he would have scored anyways.
Yeah. All right, next question. Armed trash at Los Not Dos.
That's Carlos Rodriguez.
Oh, changing his name a couple times. What's up, Carlos? Since Bobby Skinner went up to New Jersey, New York, any chance Justin Pennick comes down to Florida for the Miami game?
Yeah, when are you going to come down to Florida? I mean, I remember the offseason of 2020, it was bully. I was trying to get you to move down here, bully Justin down to Florida.
No, didn't work. I had a brief opportunity to go to the Tampa Bay game because I found like a really cheap flight, but the flight was so cheap that I would have had to like stay with you, or I would have had to find a hotel, and at that point, it just wasn't worth it. If we have, like, an event, for the it's a little late now, but if we ever want to have an event, if we ever find ourselves and we're playing in a Florida game, Tampa Bay, Miami, whatever, and we want to have, like, an event in Florida, and the company will pay for it, I'll go. There you go.
Why don't you just move down here?
No. No. Why would I move down there? Simply because
I have a question. Would you rather enjoy life more or less?
I love New Jersey. But I think it's your ego that's keeping you down in Florida and you just want me to join you. But it makes sense.
It's not my ego. I know that I would hate living up there.
Well, it makes sense for at least one of the Giants co-hosts. Oh, wow. It makes sense for at least one of the Giants
co-hosts. I've been making that joke privately a lot, and I probably shouldn't say on a podcast. That is a joke. But it's like, I would never want to live up there. I hate it up there. It's so much better down here.
But it makes sense for one of, like, it makes sense for one of us to live near MetLife Stadium and in the, like, New York tri-state area. It makes sense. One of us, I said. Hasn't
never made sense to me yet. One All right, next question.
All right, next question. Tim, at the Giants good yet?
This is a tough question for defense, at least.
Outside of DJ, who are your quarterly offensive and defensive MVPs?
Offense is easily Andrew Thomas, right? Or if you could maybe say Shepard.
Yeah, I was. Yeah, Thomas is, I think, definitely the runner-up, but Shepard and Galladay, because even when Shepard's been out, Galladay has stepped up. And do you know that Kenny Galladay is tied for the league lead with 11 receptions of 15 plus yards? I haven't even felt like the Giants haven't even fully unlocked him yet, and he is doing what he was signed to do.
He has his highest catch rate of his career right now.
Yes.
And he's like 2 yards off of his yards per game. So although Matthew Stafford made him, shut yo stupid ass up.
I have a Kenny Galladay stat. His catch rate over the last two games is 82.85%, and he's also averaging 17.67 yards per catch over that span, too. And still, yeah, I don't even feel like they fully unlocked him yet. Hasn't even had that 10-catch game yet.
But to me, it's an easy Andrew Thomas.
Yes.
On defense, it's very tricky, because there's really no clear-cut one. I would say Adoree Jackson.
I was hoping you wouldn't say, because he was mine, too.
I mean, there's... Now, Adoree Jackson's a free agent signing, so every time he gives up a catch, especially on like a third down, it's like, this guy sucks. But it's like, he's been the most solid player. Like, he's been better than James Bradbury. So now he's playing against cornerback twos or wide receiver twos compared to wide receiver one, but he's been better than James Bradbury. Nobody up front has been that guy. Blake, maybe if he was, still here, but he's not. Logan Ryan, if he made a play on one of those balls last week, yes. But he hasn't, and Pep obviously hasn't been. McKinney definitely, I think it's Adoree Jackson. And I think it's not even because he's been amazing. It's just like, look at everyone else not living up to what they're supposed to be.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with Adoree. Logan Ryan. Yeah, I agree with you. I agree with you. Nobody up front has been that great. Leonard Williams had a better game. But again, with that contract, you're just expected to do
it. I don't like them using him at defensive end either, by the way.
You kind of have no choice with no edge production.
I know. We have a question about edge production later, so what's next question? This one.
Eli to Plax. Can we talk about end of first half defense, weeks 1 through 4? I think we have a lot of touchdown every single possession, so shout out Eli to Plax doing that kind of research and putting together the different drives and how many yards we gave up. They look solid for stretches, but can't stop a nosebleed in these moments. What is going on? Tom Lemmy at Tom SU44. Thank you for being there during the downtimes. What should Graham do to get the pass rush going? It seems like it is this defense's Achilles heel until they get the edge rush figured out. And then Family Six Pack at Family Six Pack One. Why are Roche and Coughlin not getting any chance to rush the passer since we legitimately have zero pass rush? This spells trouble on Sunday.
So to answer the first question, it's the pass rush, man. This pass rush is really, really bad. And Aziz is, he makes a flash play here and there. He didn't this past week, but it's like, there's no one who can consistently, not even semi-consistently win on the edge. Like, nobody on this team can win on the edge at a decent rate, And it's just, the pass, it's hard, especially, in those two-minute drills, when they are trying to get the ball downfield.
Yeah.
Like, they are not dinking and dunking. They are purposely, we need to get the ball downfield, and if I almost think it's better for offenses sometimes, and for the Giants, down 11 with 8 minutes left, and then finally their offense really opens up. It's coaches, when they're forced to, they are more aggressive, and that's when it's harder to cover man coverage routes, down the field, for a long period of time. I don't care how good you are, and when you don't have a pass rush, that's happening. The Washington game, it was a soft zone. Like, that's on Patrick Graham. But the week one, week three, week four, it's been just they cannot get a pass rush to the QB at all. Like, just the cleanest of clean pockets for quarterbacks.
Yeah, I have numbers on how bad the pass rush is right now. 28th in pressure rate, third least amount of sacks, 32nd in QB hits with 14, ninth in blitz rate, though. So, I mean, they're not hitting the quarterback. They're not pressuring the quarterback. Third least amount of sacks. I mean, it'll help. And, you know,
Lorenzo Carter looks horrible. Ocean Jimenez is horrible.
Carter's the, I would say, one of the biggest disappointments. I think we had a question like that earlier. I mean, Carter's been my biggest disappointment. I know we're not happy with McKinney, but Carter's been my biggest disappointment. Because he just looked like a better football player last year. You know, not even like, oh, numbers, production, pressures, this, that. He just looked like a better football player last year, and he's just non-existent. He's just not there. Roche and Carter Coughlin.
Give him a shot. Like, they deserve it more than Carter Coughlin. I would hate to just keep moving his position back and forth. But Roche for sure. Like, give Roche a shot. And then maybe he comes in and he sucks too, but it's I don't know, man. This pass rush is bad. It's real bad.
Yeah.
We should have kept Kyler Fackrell. That we criticized that in the moment of moving off of Kyler Fackrell and giving Ryan Anderson more money when Fackrell was a consistent, like, was it like at least could make plays as a pass rusher and had the versatility for this defense, played the run better than, you know, Ocean Jimenez does. And we just moved off of him for no reason.
All right. Jeff Boyd.
Boyd!
At the Boyd Wonder. I know it's a long shot, but if they turn the season around, are there any trade targets that interest you?
No more. No. We are not. Do not trade for anybody. The cap is screwed up right now. No trading for anybody. Unless it's like a long term, this guy's going to be here for a long time. Like if the Cardinals suck and Chandler Jones was available, I would trade a first round pick for him. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, those talks were going, it's like, yeah, I would take Chandler Jones. But no, unless it's someone that's going to be here long term and not on an expiring contract a la Leonard Williams, then no. So no, the answer is no for me. Would you, if there was a pass rusher out there for like a 6th round pick and he had a $4 million salary, would you do it?
Yeah, Marcus Golden. Absolutely.
Would you actually though? Like, and you had to clear more cap space and put more stuff into next year?
No. No, but
yeah,
still salty about Marcus Golden. What's the best way to burn down MetLife? Glock Roach asked. What if we had 1,000 inflammable TG stickers around the building? And Ben Butler asked, at Ben Butler 7, if MetLife Stadium burnt down in like stars or quotes, what style of stadium would you like to see in its place? Something similar to Arrowhead or a dome like the Saints have? What style do you think creates the best atmosphere? Give me like the Vikings. The Vikings, the Falcons, and what the Rams have right now. Like,
I just
want
it burnt down.
Retractable. Why can't we have a retractable roof?
I've never been in a dome before.
Me not. Like, I've been in a stadium.
I feel like I would kind of hate it. You know what? I'm one of those people that's very resistant to change. So I think it's like, oh, I don't want a dome. But if I ever went to a dome, I'd probably fall in love with the dome.
I don't want a dome. I want a roof. I don't want a dome. I want a retractable roof where you can have it open when it's nice, and then you can close it when it's not nice. I mean, so actually, I have inside information, and I cannot tell you where this comes from. I have a friend who works in government, who one of his jobs, initially, I think I might have told this story already, but one of his jobs when he was an intern was to look at possible ways that they could put a retractable roof on MetLife Stadium. And that project was a thing that was talked about amongst the state, but it never happened.
I'm trying
to
find.
That's my tip. What did you say?
I'm trying to find a tweet. Someone replied to me earlier. Here it is.
About burning down the stadium.
Wyland, at Wyland Plug. Daniel Jones at home. 62% completions, 3,340 yards, 14 touchdowns, 16 interceptions. On the road, 63.5% rate, 3,800 yards, 25 touchdowns, 7 interceptions. Burn down MetLife Stadium.
So what's the big difference?
To the ground.
Completion rate sounds the same, but is it the touchdowns?
14 touchdowns, 16 interceptions to 25 and 7?
Oh, that the touchdown interception ratio is the difference. Okay.
Yeah, 11 more touchdowns and 9 less interceptions.
That was also an Eli thing, too. That was an Eli thing.
Road Warriors. I still remember the Super Bowl 42 intro. Resiliency. Imani Toomer saying that.
How many wins does Daniel
Jones have? We are the New York Giants.
Does he have 9 wins in his career and 3 of them are comeback wins?
Yeah.
Eli Manning?
That was kind of like a backhanded like compliment tweet to Daniel Jones. Because he hasn't won games, you know, which is bad. But I also want people like, he just doesn't like have that moment in the, like, you know, where he wins a game at the end. It's like, well, 33% of his wins come that way.
Yeah.
It's just he didn't have it in 2020 because we sucked, especially on offense. All right, anything else?
Stupid Bears game. No, that was good. Go with the Yankees.
Yeah, hopefully the Yankees win.
If they do win, I am going to a home playoff game. I'm going to try and make it on a night we are not recording, but if it is on a night that we are recording, we have to record early, and I will be in the Bronx. So that's just a heads up. I'm giving you that heads up right now.
Yeah. Word up. I've never been to a Yankee game.
Sucks. Remember we went to that Met game, and we stayed for like 2.5 hours, but we saw 5 minutes of game?
Yep, and we even missed the runs that were scored in that game. We got there in the top of the first and missed like five of the 6 runs scored in that game.
I don't think there were 6 runs.
There was like a 3-run home run, and then Alonso had like a 2-run double or something. It was, so 5 runs, I guess.
It was going on for 2 innings.
No, not even. They didn't even finish the first. Trying to think, is there anything else I want to hit on?
Thank you for the great week that it's been.
Yeah.
Again.
Could you imagine if his team was good?
No, I can't.
Yeah, I mean, top 10 in all football is really cool. That's because of you people. I can share. I said the John Boy Media because we are ranked higher than Talking Baseball and Talking Yanks. And I left
a
Slack message being like, hey, really proud of our growth of our baseball podcast. Who are in the midst of the playoffs, by the way. So it's not like they're in the downtime.
Yeah, Yankees just like clinched a wild card game. Like, I don't want to hear the whole, oh, you know, it's not really a big moment for baseball. No, this is like the biggest moment of the year for baseball.
The biggest moment.
And no, Giants just won a week 4 game when they were
0-3. ranked ahead of them. Now, do we get more downloads than them per episode? No.
No.
But we were ranked ahead of them, and I said almost ranked as high as us, and I just feel like 80% of the people in the company just don't care. It's basically like Jim likes us, Kyle likes us, and that's it. Everyone else has to prove it to me.
Well, okay.
They have to reply to the Talking Giants tweet and say, I care about you guys.
Well, that's okay. It's because it's Talking Giants versus the world.
You have to listen to an hour of a podcast and listen to all the way to the end on the day after a Yankees wildcard game to prove that you care. It's the only way. That's the only way.
I agree.
Oh, Jared Wins on the or someone in the chat says, AMA. I have an AMA tomorrow on Reddit at 3 o'clock. So if you're listening to this before that, come ask me anything. Here's the thing. Last year I did it and it went really well. But now we're bigger and we have like our loyal, like crazy audience, and I'm gonna get some like questions. And
you're gonna get some questions.
I'm gonna get some questions tomorrow. You're gonna
get some like appearance questions, your attractiveness level.
No, those aren't the ones I'm worried about. I'm worried about like talking about like violence and stuff.
Burning
and
down
you know
the
me,
light.
I'm gonna answer every single one. So,
have people called you dad? That's like a thing amongst content creators where like younger people will call you dad.
If they do, I ignore it.
Okay. Jolly Olive likes us, Jack. Jolly's a good guy.
Is he a Giants fan?
I think he is. Cause he tweeted out Sunday night. He said at Justin Panic, I'm so happy you get to talk about a win.
You know what? He liked the Slack message. The 4 people that liked it were you, Kyle, Jim, and Jack. So those are my those are the core four right there. Doesn't count.
He's new, so he's trying to.
No, Jack likes us.
No, I like him. He's a nice guy.
I know David likes us, and I think Jake wants to like us, but he just ends up hating me half the time.
It's true.
All right. And that was Inside Baseball, John Boy Media.
That was company gossip.
Yep. None of them can hear it because no one listens. All right, we appreciate you guys. We'll see you on the next episode on Friday, our Cowboys preview. Until then, let's go Big Blue.